everybody, and welcome to a wonderful, beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm so happy to be here with all of you. I have a great show planned for you today. Kayleen St. John from Genuine Foods and adjunct professor at NYU Food Studies Program will be joining us in just a little bit. But first, I want to go over some things going on in the news, some things you want to participate, of course, share my weekly recipe with you, and just have a little discussion. So, lots of things going on. First, I'd like to just share with you that this weekend is the NOFA New York's Winter Conference. For those of you unfamiliar with NOFA, NOFA is the Northeast Organic Farming Association, and all of the Northeast states have their own chapter. So this is the New York chapter's Winter Conference. Connecticut has one, Massachusetts, Vermont, on and on. So the Winter Conference is an opportunity for farmers when they are not out in the field in the summer to all gather together to really talk about policy, talk about best techniques, to talk about how we are going to adjust and change with the climate. And so I'm really excited to be going this weekend. And I'm also excited because I've been invited and asked to join the board of NOFA New York. And I feel like this is a real honor, especially since I am not an organic farmer. I am an organic grower. I do have a large organic garden of my own. But I think they are really looking to have me join the board more because of my connection with community and my commitment and passion to organic. I have been promoting organic food for as long as I can remember. I support organic methods. I support biodynamics. And I am an activist when it comes to community. I really want to bring people together around good practices and really promote these and educate people, because I think if people know what how broken our real food system is, they too will jump on board. And as we all know, the organic food movement has been growing, and I'll be talking more about that with my guests later in the show. So anyway, I'm just thrilled to be joining the NOFA board, and I'll be going up this weekend. And the conference starts Friday and goes through Sunday. And if you don't have plans, it's a wonderful thing to come up to. You can just come in for a day if you can't come for the whole weekend. It's in Saratoga Springs at the Hilton in the town. And we're also going to be honoring two farmers from Long Island, Karen and Fred Sangley from Sangley Farms. And I'm really excited that they'll be honored. And the keynote speaker is Leah Penniman, who is the co-director and program manager of Soul Fire Farms, which is a wonderful organic farm up near Albany. And they are really working to, towards an anti-racist food system. And they are working to really bring people of all walks of life into the movement and into the farm. So that's really great. This weekend, if you're not going to be at the NOFA conference, I hope you will be at the Women's March. And that's, you know, one of these times where I really wish I could clone myself and be in two places at once, because I'd love to be at the Women's March. The Women's March, the national one, is happening in Washington, D.C., and then, of course, there's sister marches all over the country. There's one in New York City. And I know there's been some talk of a division this year between the original Women's March and some fractions of a Women's March due to some accounts of people feeling like there's anti-Semitism in the movement. And I just beg all women to just show up, come together, don't even participate in that discussion. I just feel like we have to all be on one page. There is no room for anti-Semitism. I think whatever happened must have been a misunderstanding. I don't believe there's anti-Semitism amongst the Women's March, and I just beg everybody, if you can, to show up, because we need to show solidarity, we need to show the power of women, and we need to march as a unified organization coming together to demand equal rights, equal pay, equal opportunity, and the future of the planet. So it's all kind of mixed together, but show up if you are not going to be at the NOFA conference. Also coming up, starting January 21st, is New York Restaurant Week. It actually goes for 2 weeks now. Used to be 1 week now. They've extended it because it's such a great opportunity for during the slower months when restaurants are not packed to get people out, and it's an opportunity to try restaurants that otherwise might be out of your price range. So they offer two-course lunches for $26 and three-course dinners for $42. Still a bit hefty, but if you can try really good restaurants that are sourcing their food in a responsible way, that's a wonderful thing. And we all know that costs more. So it shouldn't, and we hope we're working towards it not. But until we change our food system, that's the way it is. So come out and support those restaurants that are doing the right thing. Another really exciting thing that's going on, and it happens to be on Long Island, however, these podcasts you can watch from anywhere, is the Real Truth Health Conference. And this is a free 10-day conference with over 35 top authors and speakers appearing live at the Hilton in Melville, Long Island. And I know it should be in New York City because it's such a great conference, but it's out on the island where they are offered space, and it's a great conference. One of my food heroes, Vandana Shiva, will be there live in person February 2nd and 3rd. So check the schedule. There's amazing, amazing people that are going to be there. Just to run through a few of them, in addition to Vandana Shiva, there's Brenda Davis, Joel Fuhrman, Pamela Popper, Brian Clement, James Hansen, Ocean Robbins from Baskin and Robbins. You know, he wrote the Heal Your Body, Feel Great, and Transform Your World. Gabriel Cousins, Jeffrey Smith, who brought to us the film Genetic Roulette. And he's just an amazing person, really raising the awareness of GMOs from the very beginning. Michael Clapper, talking about vegan nutrition. The list goes on and on. And I really think you want to participate. So check the schedule. Just go to the website, The Real Truth About Health Conference, and you can see all the speakers that will be there. But I'm actually switching around a trip I had so that I can be there and hear Vandana Shiva speak. So also next week, next month, February 27th, there's a divestment lobby day up in Albany. And for those of you that caught the State of the State address with Governor Cuomo, he is really now with both houses Democratic and having that support behind him, is really making some great strides in putting climate change front and center. I know he has a lot of work to do to really come forth with honoring what he's saying he's going to do. He needs to start by not allowing the infrastructure. I mean, we might not allow fracking in New York State, but he's allowing a lot of these pipelines to go forward, and we really need to stop that. We need to stop the infrastructure from pipelines that are importing fracked gas from Pennsylvania through New York Harbor, where you know if there's any leaks, and they all do leak, would be devastating not just to the ecosystem and the wildlife, but to tourism, to the economy. It's just inexcusable. So we really need to hold him to what he said. But, you know, listening to his speech, I really am looking forward to seeing him get some things done, because we have a lot of work to do to get off of fossil fuels and turn this state into a state leading the way in sustainable energies. And there's a lot we can do. And so showing up and supporting divesting, meaning getting all of our money from all of New York State pension plans and local pension plans. I know the school pension plans are all mixed up with gas and oil companies. We need to divest from fossil fuel companies and invest in sustainable methods of energy. So anyway, February 27th, Big Lobby Day up in Albany. I hope many of you will be there. And save the date for March 3rd. As you know, I am back on the board of Slow Food North Shore, chairing up Slow Food North Shore, and our favorite biggest fundraiser of the year is coming up, and that's our Food and Film Feast, which sells out every year. It's at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. It's a great, great event. We show anywhere from 6 to 10 short, and I mean short, documentaries on issues having to do with climate change, having to do with school lunches, having to do with local farmers doing the right thing. We have a goat farm out east that we're going to be talking about. And then we pair it with a speaker from the film, as well as a food dish, a course for the film. So you're sitting down to a 6 to 8 course meal, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful evening. Lots of learning, lots of fun, lots of great food. So save the date for March 3rd at the Cinema Arts Center. Tickets are not on sale yet, but they will be on sale soon. And now, I also want to share with you, before I go on to share my recipe, I want to tell you about an unbelievable documentary that I saw last week at the Cinema Arts Center, and it was a bit scary. It's called Generation Zapped. And it was being promoted by a new nonprofit organization, which is the Citizens for 5G Awareness. And the 5G, for those that don't know, is a new form of airwaves that they are putting up all over, a new technology that is supposed to be faster and work better than the cell phones we have now. But because the waves are not as long, they seem to have to put towers or antennas every 2 to 10 houses in neighborhoods. And so out here in Huntington, there's already a couple hundred cell towers going up in neighborhoods, and people are freaking out because this technology is not tested, which is just the way our government is. They put things out without testing, and then it's up to citizens to freak out, to demand testing, and then to have to fight to get it pulled. So before they invest all this money and go forward with this technology, the Citizens for 5G Awareness is trying to get them to test first before going forward. But anyway, this film, Generation Zapped, is just talking about the amount of radiation that we're all exposed to from all the cell phones and computers and technology that is all around us. And there's no way we're going to go back. I mean, we're now all addicted to our cell phones. And I mean addicted. I mean, you know, when you go into a restaurant and everyone, instead of talking to each other, they're on cell phones. You go into the subway, people are on their cell phones. I mean, you stand at a subway station, everyone's looking at their cell phone. People are not engaging with each other. So our society, just in that way, has changed so much. But the exposure to radiation is something that we're not thinking about. And these waves are flying all around us. And the increase of cancer, especially when it comes to brain cancer, is really, it has really grown tremendously. And there's a lot of doctors that are really concerned. And so there's things that you can do to avoid it. So Generation Zapped is something that you can watch on Netflix. I recommend you watching it and looking into it. I have links on my website if you are interested. And I really recommend everybody just becoming informed. I also have on my website a call out to ask people to call in New York, our senators, to join Senator Blumenthal. He wrote a letter to the Federal Communications Commission asking them to please test first, to prove to us that this is safe before they go forward. And so we're asking Senator Gillibrand, Senator Schumer, and Congressman Tom Suozzi to do the same and to support this bill that Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut has put forth. So anyway, if you don't subscribe to my newsletter, you can sign up at iegreen.com. Every week I'll send out a letter telling you who I am going to be interviewing that week on the Progressive Radio Network, as well as talking about some of these really, really important issues. Okay, so my recipe this week, there's been so much talk about jackfruit, and I was like, what is this stuff? And I was up in Vermont recently, and people were having pulled pork sandwiches. Of course, you know, they are pigs that these people raised. But nevertheless, I was not a part of it. And I tried to find jackfruit up in Vermont, and it was not available at any of the co-ops I went to. So when I got home, I found some jackfruit, cans of jackfruit at Trader Joe's, and I decided I'm going to do something with it. So I attempted to make a pulled pork imitation sandwich. So this is my vegan barbecued pulled jackfruit sandwich. Came out amazing, I have to tell you. Came out so amazing that I am going to make this as one of the dishes at the Food and Film Feast. So if you get your tickets, you will get to experience this unbelievably delicious sandwich. I have no idea if it tastes like pulled pork. I never had pulled pork, but it was delicious. Okay, so you're going to start with one onion that I chopped, 2 teaspoons of garlic, 1 can of the young green jackfruit. Now, jackfruit, when it's ripe, is not what you want to use. You want to use a young green jackfruit. Jackfruits can be so large. Look them up, what they look like. I had never seen one before. They can be up to 100 pounds. They're these big, oval, bumpy fruits. So, you know, at Whole Foods, they do sell them. They sell them, you know, already cut, like a chunk of it. But you don't want a ripe one for this. You really want a young one in order to get the texture that we want. So I also added 8 baby Bella mushrooms, 1 cup of red pepper diced, 1 celery stalk, 1 teaspoon of cumin, 1 teaspoon of liquid smoke, 1/2 teaspoon paprika, and 1/2 teaspoon of smoked paprika, and 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. I used 1 cup of barbecue sauce. Now, I have a recipe on my website of my homemade barbecue sauce. I did not have that available at the time, so I used barbecue sauce, an organic barbecue sauce from Trader Joe's. It was a sriracha barbecue sauce, and it worked really well. 2 cups of vegetable stock, 1 teaspoon salt, 1/2 teaspoon black pepper, 2 star anise, 2 teaspoons vegan Worcestershire sauce, and olive oil. And then with the sandwich, I also made a vegan slaw, which was very easy. Just, you know, while this is cooking, you can whip that together. That was with 1 cup of cabbage, 1 cup of red cabbage, 1 carrot grated, 3 tablespoons of cilantro chopped, salt to taste, black pepper to taste, 1 tablespoon sugar, and juice from 1 lime. And I just let that sit in the lime juice and kept stirring it up and put that on the sandwich when it was ready. So you're going to drain and rinse the jackfruit from the can first. And there is a core to the pieces of jackfruit, and you can cut that core off or not. I mean, if you cut the core off, it will pull apart easier with the texture. I did not do that when I made it the first time, and it still worked, but I found that while I was pulling it apart in the pot, I was kind of cutting the core off. So in a heavy stock pot or Dutch oven, you're going to heat the olive oil over medium heat. Sauté the onion for 5 minutes until it becomes translucent. Then add the garlic and cook for another minute. Add the jackfruit and all of the spices, including the liquid smoke and the star anise. Cook for a few minutes, making sure the jackfruit is covered with the spices. Then add the mushrooms, peppers, celery, and cook for another 5 minutes or so. And then add the stock and simmer on low for about 20 minutes until half the liquid has evaporated. Add the barbecue sauce and cook for another 15 or 20 minutes. And then I used 2 forks, and that's when I separated the pieces of jackfruit, and they just pulled apart the way I assume pulled pork does. And then I transferred the jackfruit to a baking pan and placed it if you are doing this in a Dutch oven, you can actually just stick the Dutch oven into a 350-degree oven and let that cook for another 40 minutes, stirring a couple times while it's cooking. And while that was happening, that's when I made the vegan slaw. And then when it was ready, I pulled it out of the oven. I put it on a brioche roll, or you can put it on some homemade bread, whatever you have, hamburger roll, and put the slaw on top, and that's it. And I'm telling you, it was so good. I gave a bite to my husband. He really thought I gave him a pulled pork sandwich, so I guess I kind of made it happen. So check that out. And now it is a great pleasure of mine to introduce today's guest, Kayleen St. John. She is the executive director at a new company called Genuine Foods. and that's a forest service management company that measures its success by the health and well-being of the communities it serves. Before joining Genuine Foods, she was the COO at Ufibi Healthcare and the Director of Nutrition at Natural Gourmet Institute. Kayleen is currently an adjunct professor of nutrition in the Food Studies program at NYU. And in addition to her roles at food-based companies, she's also worked in the private practice arena, consulting with clients on the topics of heart disease, gut health, and weight loss. Kayleen, are you with me?
I am. Hi, Bhavani.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Good. So, tell me a little bit, before we get started, can you tell me a little bit about your history? How did you first get into the food movement, and where does your passion for food come from?
Sure. So I think, you know, like most folks, my history is a little bit varied. I had minored in nutrition in undergrad, but to be honest, was too much of a wuss to make the switch from a pretty strict business path at the time over to a full-time nutrition major. So I went along with my business and accounting career. I worked at a big firm and found myself reading my old nutrition textbooks for fun after working 12 hours a day. So pretty early on, I knew that, you know, was not my life's passion to work in financial consulting and accounting. So at that time, I went back to school to NYU and pursued a master's degree in nutrition, wanted to become a registered dietitian, interned at a hospital for a year, you know, yada, yada, took the RD exam, and that kind of, you know, education brought me to at least feel like I was then ready to enter the kind of food space with a little bit more education behind my name. And right when I had finished the RD certification and my education, I had known the gentleman who was taking over as CEO at Natural Gourmet Institute at the time, and it was such a great opportunity for me to get in there to work with chefs in the food arena and take what I had learned at a clinical level and bring it to, you know, a more tangible food space. So that was my first, you know, professional foray into the food realm. But on a personal level, it's always been just like a passion of mine from, you know, my mother kind of influencing us. She was very much a child of the 70s, we were, you know, not having any kind of packaged food. She was ahead of her game in terms of getting rid of convenience foods. And at the time, you know, as a child, you kind of lament it and hate it. But looking back, I think she, you know, really gave me the greatest gift, which is that appreciation for, you know, simple, wholesome food.
Mm-hmm. Good. And now with the food as medicine movement growing, maybe you can give us some of your vision of how you've watched it grow and where you think it's going.
Yeah, I think this is such an exciting time to be in this space. I think many of us and most people have known and felt that correlation between what we eat and health outcomes for years. I mean, the field of nutrition is relatively new, but we've known and seen this for, you know, at least a century at this point. And when I was in school getting my training to become a dietitian, it was, you know, eye-opening to see how we talk about food and nutrition at such a micro level. We talk about nutrients and vitamins, which, you know, is all well and good, but, you know, we eat food, we eat meals. So taking even a further step back to say, okay, how do these meals and these whole foods affect our health was kind of the first light bulb for me. And, you know, another thing that seems obvious to most, our healthcare system is certainly a little bit backwards and broken at the same time. So this food as medicine movement is really the simplest thing, and I think the strongest way that we can act together to take a more preventative approach to health. And I am a big believer that so many folks deserve a seat at the table. I'm seeing, you know, a lot of doctors joining this movement, which is fantastic. I think the community and individuals, I know, again, my mother is probably more likely to listen to a doctor than potentially even me, which is a little bit of a bummer. But now that we have the medical community and at least those forward-thinking physicians kind of leading the charge, I see this conversation really growing. But, you know, doctors, dietitians, food activists, farmers, for certain health coaches. There's, I think, a role for everyone to really strengthen and grow this movement.
Yeah, well, so many people are, you know, in an attempt to be healthy, are going towards supplements. What is your feeling as food as medicine versus, you know, finding a lot of your nutrition through supplements?
Yeah, it's my personal and professional belief supplements have a role to play, and there's a time and a place for them, but the easiest, simplest way is to go after the real deal. And I think a lot of kind of capitalistic-minded companies might be taking advantage of this healthy and wellness movement and putting that towards the marketing of supplements when, and again, just as the field of nutrition is relatively new, so is the field of researching these isolated supplements, right? So just because at a molecular level, the vitamin C from, you know, a red pepper mirrors the molecular build out of a vitamin C of a, you know, a supplement or a pill, that has no bearing on how those two very different substances act within the body. So, you know, nutrients in isolation, I think we're learning, do not act the same within the body. So again, whenever possible, I think food first and then supplements, you know, hopefully under the direction of a healthcare professional too, because I think we could have a whole other conversation on the quality of supplements that are out there right now and how those are regulated, but I'll keep it brief.
Right, I know where they're coming from and how they're treated. Yeah, it's a whole issue by itself.
Yeah, if there's any infection,
how different is the healthy message delivered depending on the audience, and should it differ depending on the audience? Because, you know, depending on who you're addressing, you know, all of us, you know, adjust, you know, what we might say. What's your message with healthy, and how does it vary?
This is a tough one, I think, with especially with public health recommendations. And now I'm working pretty deeply in the school food realm. This messaging of what defines healthy and how do we best communicate that to folks is I think it's complicated. I'm a big believer in meeting people where they are. So when I was in private practice, working with folks one-on-one, I think meeting people where they're at and helping to foster and encourage incremental change is really important. So what might be a good recommendation for, you know, you or I might very well differ from anyone else that we meet and talk to. So I'm a big believer in meeting people where they're at and, you know, as best we can, working to meet individual goals. But like I said before, that becomes a lot more difficult when we're making decisions for communities instead of just individuals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any recommendations on how to bring different people to the table? I know you mentioned how everyone has to be a part of the message at the table, but you know, I find, you know, as a person working in my community with slow food, and I also, you know, I'm one of the organizers with the Long Island Food Coalition, and now No for New York I'm going to be joining. You know, how do we bring different communities together to hear a unified message? Any suggestions there?
I mean, really, I think you're probably at the forefront of all of this and just being involved and having these discussions, right? Instead of coming down, you know, from a top-down message from, you know, an organization really being at the table with people and helping to create an open environment where, you know, all of these kind of inputs can be heard. But, it, you know, for folks that have a voice and that have a stage, I think it's important for us to, you know, number one, not disparage anyone else who might have input or ideas for ways that we can improve. I see, you know, some of this happening, you know, potentially in the medical community across like doctors and RDs and then towards health coaches or chefs. So I think it's our responsibility to, you know, make sure that message is a positive one and always open the conversation to folks. And along with that, it on a little bit different line, but I think the kind of like dietary tribalism, for lack of a better word, I think does a lot of disservice for all of us who are really trying to just promote better food quality and access and promoting healthy behaviors, right? I think if we all took a step back, you know, the vegans versus the paleo versus the, you know, Mediterranean diet, you know, 80 to 90% of what we all want to promote to folks is the same. So it really does no benefit for any of us to, like, disparage one another. I think it just fosters so much more confusion. And again, when I was in private practice, I would be talking to my clients, and they would say things like, you know, I'm just so confused. No one knows what they're talking about. Forget it. I'm not going to try anything new. So,
right.
Again, this kind of infighting is not helpful, I think.
Yeah. I mentioned it, and when it came to the Women's March, I was just shocked. You know, it's like, we can't have infighting. You know, we need to be unified. We need to, the message that we all want, and, you know, 95% with the Women's March is the same, you know. I mean, maybe even 99%. We just have to, we just can't allow this infighting, you know. It just wastes time. There's no time or room for it. But we have to have open conversation.
It's okay to have a different opinion, but I think, you know, a time and a place, and always putting out that, like, unified front and being sure not to, you know, disparage one another when it's really not necessary.
Mm-hmm. So what concerns you most about the wellness trend and movement?
I think other folks feel it similarly, but sometimes I'm really put off by the current wellness movement. It can seem really, I think, exclusive and unattainable, that in order to be healthy, you must have mushroom coffee every day, or you must have this very expensive, you know, yoga outfit from this one store, or you have to look a certain way.
Right.
So this kind of, you know, like, prefabricated, very, like, wealthy, unattainable wellness lifestyle, I find really off-putting, and I know a lot of other folks do. So, you know, it's not sexy and it's not going to make any money, but, you know, things like, I mean, like, dried beans and just local vegetables, to me, I wish were at the forefront of this, like, wellness movement, but again, I don't know how sexy of a message that would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, basically it's real food. I mean, you know, the people that are healthiest are not, you know, wearing those fancy yoga clothes and having mushroom tea every morning. They're having real traditional food that, you know, comes from a place that they're familiar with, you know, that's in season and is untreated, you know?
Right. Right. Totally.
So, like you said, I think, you know, most of us that are on this healthy movement or promoting healthy food, you know, the most of it is the same. Real food from, you know, from good sources, and, you know, and not too much of it, and mostly vegetables and fruits.
Right, right. But very simply, like, hard stop that. If we could get that message, you know, across and accepted, I think we'd be, you know, light years ahead of where we're at now.
Absolutely, absolutely. So how do you bring your industry experience into your teaching, let's say, at NYU? How does that inform what you do?
Sure. So the course that I'm teaching within the food studies department is called Nutrition in Food Studies. So it is a higher level look at nutrition science and how it impacts food and nutrition messaging across all different areas within, you know, kind of the food world. So I really enjoy teaching that class and really learning from my students. I had come up through a much more clinical and science-focused nutrition realm, and my students approach food through a completely different lens than I was initially taught. So it's super interesting for me to work with them on how, you know, different nutrition science approaches might influence, you know, food access across different communities, or how different food systems have evolved over time to, you know, disparage and neglect certain communities. I really enjoy that. And my main goal for my course there is to help give these students, I call it like a BS detector, for lack of a better term. So how can they start to see nutrition and health headlines potentially in the news or on TV, and they can then kind of filter out what's worthwhile, what's legitimate, and what's not, and maybe how they can then take those little tidbits onto their further careers. Because most of my students now aren't training to become dietitians or nutritionists. They just want to have a clear and solid understanding of nutrition so that they can leverage that, you know, into their own industry or their own, you know, network and in professional life. Mm-hmm. And in my background in working at culinary school and some food startups, you know, kind of gives that real world example. I think oftentimes with food and nutrition, we can say, you know, best case scenario, this might be the makeup of a meal that we would serve a certain population. But when you're put into reality, there are time constraints, operations constraints. You have to think about labor and packaging and storage. So I bring my experience in all of those realms, you know, kind of into the classroom. So we're not always looking at food from such a, you know, in a perfect world, this is what it would look like, but, you know, real world application of all of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that, you know, always strikes me is when, you know, people will say, well, you need a dietitian or a nutritionist to, you know, help be on this board to help make this up, you know, to design the food or the menu, you know, and then you look at school food and hospital food, which has been, you know, promoted by dietitians who supposedly have nutrition background. It's just shocking. Like, how did our school food and our institutional food get so bad when it was designed by people supposedly who are nutritionists and dietitians?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many inputs into that. Like, that's such a loaded topic, right? Like,
I know. I don't know that I was really even looking for an answer. It's just, it always baffles me.
Right. There's like one interesting tidbit that I'd like to throw in if I can. And I am personally friends with and know so many RDs and dietitians, nutritionists in my network whose passion is for the food itself, right? So they approach nutrition not from a clinical, you know, removed supplement standpoint, but they're, you know, hands-on, very much involved in, you know, the food aspect of nutrition. But I do think that something that might be missing from the whole education become an RD is exactly that, the whole culinary nutrition aspect of it and the translation of nutrition science and research into, you know, tangible edible meals. I do think that there's a little bit of a translation piece that could be missing for some folks. And to me, that's everything. How do you make something edible in real world unless you have that translation piece?
Right, right. Anyway, let's take a couple minute break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of your private consulting work and how that works. So everyone, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Kayleen St. John, who is the nutritionist at Genuine Foods, and be right back.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food, and you're listening to PRN, your source for progressive, up-to-date, and inspirational information on nutrition and health.
Hey, it's Jesse, PRN station manager. I have an exciting announcement for our amazing listeners. PRN has a new voicemail line that will allow you to connect better with our hosts. If you can't listen live but have a question or comment for one of our hosts, just call 862-800-6805. That's 862-800-6805. This feature will allow your voice to be heard on your favorite PRN show.
Thank you for listening to the Progressive Radio Network.
Yeah, I'm not known as a gadget guy, but I love gadgets that really do the trick, like the new app. The Progressive Radio Network has an app, thanks to our friends at Audio Now. Hey, this is Mark Farrell, host of Insight on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we broadcast live out of New York City. But if you can't catch the show live, no frets. It's always archived. It's always on the app. Download it now, listen later, whenever you want. The Progressive Radio Network app is available from our friends at Audio Now. Check it out.
PRN.FM, your station for progressive viewpoints on politics, economics, health, the environment, and a whole lot more. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
KMN, yum, yeah. KMN, yum, yeah.
And welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest who I am speaking with is Kayleen St. John. And a correction, I said she was the nutritionist at Genuine Foods. She's the executive director at Genuine Foods. Kayleen, can you talk to us a little bit about Genuine Foods before I ask you about your consulting business?
Yeah, sure thing. So I joined Genuine just 2 weeks ago at this point, so I'm still fresh, as you would say. But Genuine Foods is a food service management company, and right now we service mostly school accounts and in charter schools. And our goal is to, you know, not only provide food for these companies, but beyond that, measuring the success by, you know, the performance. You know, how are kids eating the food? Are they enjoying it? Are they participating in meal times? And then whenever possible, digging in deeper to say, like, okay, can we then draw some correlative factors or, you know, ideally causal, but if folks are increasing participation in breakfast, are we seeing any kind of outcomes as it relates to standardized test scores and things like that? So we really just want to go a step further, and we're not just providing food, but food with an outcome in mind.
And so you're marketing mostly to schools?
At this time, we are, yeah. We work with a lot of charter schools in the New York and New Jersey area. And the reason for that is our founder, Jeff Mills, has such a deep history as it relates to school food. He ran D.C. public school food for years. So that is our niche right now. But, you know, we certainly have the capabilities to expand beyond that.
Uh-huh. And does Genuine Foods have a commitment to buying, you know, organic food or local food, or is there any type of mission involved there?
Yes. So we are totally mission-driven behind it all, committed to the quality of the food, and, you know, we measure the quality by buying as local and organic whenever budget allows, but really partnering with the local community, I would say, is a priority. Not to say organic isn't, but, you know, local, I think, for us is kind of the pillar. So the high-quality food, it's treated with care by our chefs and culinary team. It's delivered to the school in a thoughtful manner and then served with really love and care, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I know in public schools, you know, one of the hardest things is really the procurement of food locally by a farmer who actually grows enough to meet the needs of a school district because, as we know, we're feeding so many thousands, if not millions, of kids. New York City School, I think, is 1 million kids every day. So, you know, it's just a huge, or million meals every day. It's just a huge amount of buying power. So I know I was talking to, you know, the head of school food in New York City, and he was just saying, you know, to try to bring local peaches to the school. I mean, they had to go to many different farmers to get enough peaches for one day, you know?
Right. But you're so right. We have that buying power that those in charge should really be leveraging it for good. And, you know, it's a shame that, especially in the tri-state area, I'm just getting up to speed, but in school food, you know, a lot of folks are shipping in apples from Washington when, you know, some of the best apple farms are right in our area. So the whole logistics and ops kind of behind the scenes also need some tweaking too.
Absolutely. So talk to us a little about your private practice. What type of clients are you working with, and how do you work?
Yeah, so I just recently ceased seeing private clients. So I had a child in the past year, and since starting with Genuine, it was a little too much for me.
Congratulations.
So I stepped away from that. Yeah, thank you. I just didn't have the bandwidth anymore, but it was so important, I think, for me to have that kind of one-on-one individual time in working with people. And I worked as a part of a practice, and we saw folks with a lot of different issues. But I think the top reasons for my clients coming to see me were gut health and gut disorders, heart health, and I guess I would say diabetes. So some chronic diseases, and then just a broader kind of spectrum of gut disorders.
Uh-huh. And do you see a correlation? I know there's a lot of talk between a correlation between genetically modified foods and gut health. What do you see a correlation there in your work?
I would almost say it's difficult to isolate that variable at this time.
Right.
In talking with folks, you know, in the tri-state and in the more broad populace of the U.S., I think GMO consumption is just so high that I couldn't correlate that specifically with a gut disease or disorder. But, you know, maybe speaking a little bit more broadly, I would say, you know, processed food consumption definitely correlated with poor gut health, you know, low fiber, low nutrient, that type of diet certainly correlated with gut health. And I bet if we had the time and the resources to dig a little bit deeper, I imagine we may see something there with GMOs, but I couldn't really, I think, foster that right now.
Right. Because, you know, you hear so much more about leaky gut syndrome and, you know, inflammation, and, you know, inflammation being the root source of so many diseases. And, you know, I'm just wondering if, you know, with those conditions, which seem to be so prevalent, what is the most important thing that you recommend to people when you're seeing clients like that?
Yeah, so if it's a gut disorder client, certainly could be a lot of different red flags, but kind of like you said, and we're all coming back to a lot of the same assertions, this standard American diet, really high in processed foods and low in fiber, we know does not foster the growth of the microbiome that we would like to see, both from a, you know, size standpoint, how many bacteria are there, but also from a diversity standpoint. We're not seeing as diverse of an environment of bacteria in the microbiome within folks who have that highly processed, low-fiber diet. So, again, I oftentimes come back to the messaging with folks, and it certainly depends on where they're at and the diet that they're eating and the disorder that we're trying to work through, but, you know, increasing a lot more fiber at the baseline, so reducing those processed foods, looking to include a lot more of the whole grains and the legumes to really foster that pre- and probiotic consumption. Fermented foods, certainly. And then, yeah, I mean, veggies and fruits. But like you alluded to before, if someone has, you know, a leaky gut situation or a more complicated gut health disorder, you know, we're probably going to approach it a little bit differently because you have to do a little bit of healing before I would introduce a lot of those kind of roughage type products. Mm-hmm.
And where do you recommend people get most of their fiber from? I know people, you know, a lot of terms as basic as, you know, eat a more high fiber diet, people are like, what does that mean? Can you share that with, I mean, real basic for some of my listeners?
Sure. And that's another one where I think, you know, folks will say, well, I take Metamucil or this, you know, refrigerated shake that I have has a lot of fiber in it, but it might be like an inulin or a chicory root, which could exacerbate some gut disruption. But again, like whole foods, if you're not eating a highly processed diet, meeting fiber requirements is really not that difficult. I mean, berries, you get a lot of bang for your buck. Same with beans and lentils. And whole grains, if you can tolerate them, you know, a cup of cooked wheat berries or kamut is really going to put you off in the right direction. So I get that question a lot from folks. Can I overdo it on fiber? Or should I be taking a supplement? And oftentimes, most of the time, the answer is no. Any type of food that is supplemented with fiber is likely done so, you know, potentially as a marketing ploy on top of it. So those might be the things you want to avoid anyway.
Uh-huh. And how about probiotic foods? When you say add probiotic foods, in addition to sauerkraut, which I think is an obvious one for most people, what do you recommend? Because I know a lot of people for probiotics, you know, end up taking a supplement because they don't know what else to do.
Yeah, I mean, any veggie can really be lacto-fermented. And I think, especially in the tri-state, we're seeing the availability of these really start to rise. So in that refrigerated section near the kimchi obviously is a great one, but we're seeing, you know, things like different carrot blends and radish blends being available. And the portion size that, you know, I'm seeing in the research and that folks are eating is just, you know, a few tablespoons a day. So it's not as though you need to sit down with a bowl of this type of food to reap its benefits.
Uh-huh. And what about people with cancer? Of course, that's such a big one.
Yeah.
Do you see many people that are working to try to heal their cancer through diet, or are they doing it more as a, you know, as a comprehensive, like as a, you know, a co-diet along with chemo? Or do you see people that are trying to heal themselves just with diet?
Yeah, I think, like you alluded to, that's such a loaded topic, and depending upon where folks are along that treatment spectrum, it could be a different goal. So not as recently, but I had seen clients before that were going through chemo and treatment, and their goals were really just to remain nourished and eat food and calories so that their body could, you know, continue to operate and help them to fight the disease, but also, you know, fight alongside the treatment. So their goals might be, you know, let's find palatable foods that have protein and fat so that you're remaining nourished, and hard stop, that's our goal in working together. But, you know, in terms of healing cancer through food or remaining in remission, you know, research is definitely mixed. I didn't work with a lot of those folks, and I'd be kind of like hard-pressed to make any strong right. assertions about, you know, which type of diet or eating pattern. But again, I'd more often than not come back to, you know, the simplest things. Let's avoid as much processed food as possible, GMOs, et cetera. Let's get some really lovely local organic produce into the diet and as a starting point. But again, it's so individualized, especially as it relates to cancer.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah, I know that, you know, I work with a lot of people with cancer, and for me, I'm not a nutritionist, and so I don't even go there at all. I just say, you know, I will cook what you tell me to cook. You know, you find that information out from someone else that you're working with, whether it's a nutritionist or a doctor, and, you know, I'll follow that diet. But yeah. even with that,
so
I've seen
like,
so many
like
differences,
what,
you know?
Totally. And it sounds like what you do, when I was working at Natural Gourmet and working with the chefs, I would say, you know, you are all the most skilled to be like culinary translators, if you will, and taking that nutrition or diet prescription and then translating it into something that's edible and delicious. And I think that's like just as much a part of the healing process as actually making the diagnosis and prescription itself.
Right. And when you say, you know, healing delicious, I am so there with you, because there's also so much benefit in, you know, in being wrapped in that love blanket, you know, that the comfort food that from a childhood memory or something that just makes you feel cared for. You know, it triggers, you know, different smells or memories that have healing benefits as well. So sometimes you just can't quantify or, you know, where the healing is coming from.
Right. And I think we're learning so much more about that, like, mind-body connection and all of those intangible factors that you just mentioned. Like, everything is connected. I think mindset, feelings, you know, could certainly set off a hormonal cascade, et cetera. So I'm right with you. We might not have a way to measure those good feelings, but I'm right with you. I think it's just as important.
Right, right. Okay, so we are almost out of time. I was hoping maybe you could just share with everyone some of your contact information and where they can find out more about Genuine Foods if they are at a school that does not offer a meal plan and might be interested in bringing on a healthy meal program.
Yeah, please. So we are at genuinefoods.com, and we are talking with a lot of folks now about expanding our offering. We have a commissary kitchen in Brooklyn, so we can make food there and then deliver it to clients daily. But we also act as a food service management company. So we've staffed out kitchens on site before, developed menus, and helped on-site teams execute against them. So we have both of those capabilities. And yeah, we're really looking to, you know, expand what we're doing and show folks that, you know, food that has so many restrictions around it, especially like school food, we can maintain the quality, make it delicious and appealing to both, you know, students, parents, faculty, administration, anyone is really going to love it.
And do they, when they send the food to the schools, is it prepackaged for each child? Or are they bringing chafing pans and you need somebody on staff there to serve it up? How does that work?
So we currently do both. We have some schools that require those unitized meals in the trays served individually, but we also do, you know, family style service as well. And I think it's really nice when we're able to do that because you get a little bit more authentic food experience. You smell the food cooking and you see it, and then plated, you know, similar to the way that it's served at a home. But we
and
can certainly
so
do
does
that
your does your company provide somebody to go into the school to do the serving, or the school then has to have the kitchen staff person?
Either one. We've done both. We've trained on-site staff, or we brought our own folks to do that. So we currently operate under both models.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, thank you, Kayleen. So much information for everyone to cipher through. I will be sharing all your information on my website, so if people want to reach out to Genuine Foods, they can. And Kayleen, just thank you so much for joining me today. It's been wonderful.
Brilliant. Thanks, Bonnie. It's been great to speak. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And everyone out there who's been listening, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you all again next week. Bye for now.